Most people listening to this podcast will have considered some form of childcare. Babysitters, childminders, nurseries, nannies, it's a frickin' nightmare. Trying to find someone who's top-notch but flexible is the holy grail. The top-notch people seem to want to work 800 hours a week, and the flexible people, well, one budding babysitter once said to me, as long as you stay in the same room as them, it's okay, isn't it? If you're still looking for the right childcare arrangement, then maybe consider B&Co. They offer a highly individual, first-class service tailored to your needs. Their sitters are all creative people, actors, dancers, artists, which makes for a more engaging, creative experience. One sitter recently helped my kids at bath time, and when I came in the room, they were all pretending to be gorillas.
Looking after kids has improved my improvisation skills. Used to be something I was petrified of, but they just do it all the time. They pick up anything, can be a hat or a boat, and you just have to go with it. And, you know, if you don't, it really doesn't go down well. So you just got to learn to, like, throw yourself into it.
That's B&Co, who are offering £25 credit to anyone signing up using the referral code TRAPDOOR2019. Now back to the podcast. Hello and welcome back. This week my guest is the very prolific stage and TV actor Paul Reddy. He plays the stay-at-home dad in Motherland and the very irritating House of Commons advisor in The Bodyguard and the complete psycho in Utopia, which we talk about a bit later on. I've known him for quite a long time. He's a very good friend of a very good friend of mine, Daisy Haggard, which is a great episode if you want to listen to, one of the first ones that I did. And so, you know, we've dossed about a lot before having kids, and he is a lovely, lovely man. And when he came in to see me, he'd brought the most delicious-looking bar of dark chocolate.
That's Bolivian. I saw that, and I was like, because I've been wandering around town today a little bit.
And then, I've been to Bolivia.
Have you?
Mm. It's very high up.
Right.
Its capital city is the highest capital city in the world, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting.
Wow. And short of breath?
Yeah, really short of breath. Mm. Felt really sick just going up the stairs, which...
Right. Which...
Hang on a second.
Theme. I have that
maybe it wasn't La Paz. Anyway, yeah. Mm, it's a particularly nice chocolate, though.
Yeah, I thought it might give a kick. I missed my nap, my afternoon nap.
Do you have an afternoon?
No, I don't. I wish I did.
I think I have a friend on Facebook who often refers to her afternoon nap, and she's in her early, possibly mid-40s.
Ooh.
But she doesn't have children.
No.
No.
And hang on a second, therein lies the...
There you go. There's the segue. Did you ever, when your daughter was asleep, actually sleep?
No.
No, no one does that in real life, do they? You know, people go, well, when they go to sleep for 25 minutes, you should sleep.
I mean, played it again, I might do that, but actually there's always too much to do, or that is the moment to have your own time.
Check your phone.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I never napped, although I would gladly nap now, I think. We should all have a siesta.
Life
would be a lot better.
Now, I think you are younger than me, but not hugely younger than me.
No.
I won't go into it. But I am...
I'm going to give you some fingers.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I total those fingers, you're in your 80s, but you're, I think, you just did it twice.
No. Just go for the first. Yeah. I just did it again in case.
No, I am older than you, but a couple of years.
Okay.
But that's what struck... But we're in the same ballpark.
Okay, fine.
And it struck me recently that maybe the... you know when you go, I'm so knackered at the end of the day and I would have that siesta and blah, blah. We're just older. Like, my parents were 10 years younger than me having kids.
Yes.
And we're at the point in our career which probably is like the peak of our careers.
Yes.
Because... I mean, there is.
I mean, it's going definitely downhill from here.
I don't mean peak of a good, you know, but you're working, you know, you're established and you're doing your thing. And so you're working and you're, and stakes are high in a way that maybe they weren't in your 20s if you'd had kids in your 20s. I don't know.
Well, I think I wasn't sure that I wanted kids.
Right, okay.
And neither was my wife. And I think then we got to a point where we thought, if we don't have kids, and because we were getting older, if we don't have kids, will we regret it?
Yeah.
And I think I definitely came down on the side of, I would regret it.
Yeah.
And I'm so, I mean, it's a silly thing to say, but I'm so happy to have had Scout.
Yeah.
That's her name.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Even though she runs me ragged and I'm too old. Basically, I feel too old most of the time. And I don't know where time has gone. I don't know where time goes.
Yeah.
It's just, it is the most wonderful thing.
Yeah.
The most difficult thing. I mean, that loss of identity for both of us, it's so huge.
Yeah.
Having tried to get on in this crazy career and been really focused on that, and suddenly having something that just goes, that's not important.
Yeah.
Or as important as this little...
And both you and Michelle have, you know, since your daughter's been born, you know, you've been in, it seems, everything on television, and Michelle's now artistic director of the Globe. I mean, you know, you're both doing really quite sort of brilliant, dream, high-pressured things. Do you think that comes from having it? You know, I mean, some people say that actually having that focus...
Well, that thing that happens that you often hear about when you are going to have a kid and suddenly you get a big job.
Yeah.
That happened...
Yeah.
When she was born, I was working on this, probably the biggest job I've ever done, really, a 10-part series filmed in Budapest. And I really hadn't had to go away very often before.
What was that series?
That was called The Terror.
Oh, okay.
Which is really, I'm very proud of it. It's a really brilliant
Did you play
show.
A scary part?
No, it was... No,
I
it's
say
called
that
the
because you were scary in Utopia, and I found myself watching you in that and knowing you and liking you tremendously and really wanting you to die a horrible death.
Yes,
and then I was like,
so,
oh, my God, he's such a good actor. I really want him to die. I really want my dear, lovely Paul to have a horrible end.
But those were really interesting characters. Or that character, Lee, was a really interesting character because actually I think they did something quite clever in the casting because... I can be quite gentle, and then they use that in that character was developed. You use that gentleness just to be horrible.
Yeah, and apparently, yes, exactly. Sort of apparently, there was a sort of like light logic to it, wasn't there? Yeah, which
and that
was
is terrifying.
Really threatening. Yes, exactly.
No, The Terror is a show about is an AMC show about a Victorian ship called The Terror.
Oh, right.
And it's based on a novel by Dan Simmons. So it's partly historical and then partly kind of other.
Right, okay.
And there was a ship in the 1840s, or this trip, this voyage in the 1840s, the Terror and the Erebus went into the Arctic to try and find a trade route over the top.
Right.
And into the east. So that's factual. That had been going on for years. They've been looking for this this route and the Northwest Passage. And this particular ship, these two particular ships, got stuck in the ice and no one came back. And there was about 135 men, I think, all disappeared. And it's still a mystery. And actually, just before we started filming, they found the Terror. the ship.
Oh, wow. That must have been annoying.
I think they found it in... annoying?
They found it, and it turns out they were all okay. Yeah. And nothing untoward happened.
Are still, yeah.
Their ancestors are alive and well.
Yeah. No, it's actually a bonus, because it's like, oh my gosh, that interest. And I think they found it in a place called Terra Bay, which might have been the first place I would have looked. That's not true.
Yeah.
No, they did find it in Terra Bay, I think.
But, yeah.
But anyway, so I was away.
Yeah.
And we had this thing called Best Endeavours, because the company knew that I was expecting my kid to be born. And so they, into the contract was this thing called Best Endeavours, where they would try their very best to get you back in time for the birth.
Oh, my God. But you didn't know that was definitely going to be the case.
No.
It was just they'd try their best.
They'd try their very best. And I've got to say, they were amazing,
this
company.
Yeah.
Because they were the showrunner and the writer, Dave Kajganich, and Sue Hugh. They really kind of nurtured this project, and they nurtured, they trusted all the actors within it and all the people within it. And so they really cared for it, which is... Yeah. I mean, that happens, I'm sure, a lot, but I've never felt it like this.
Right, yeah.
So they wanted us to be happy. They wanted us to, you know, this was a big life event. And they were really human.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes the human can be hard to find
when
money is involved.
Yeah. And did you make it back?
No.
Serious?
I didn't. But, no, so what happened was... I was flying back and forward, and on the Sunday night I flew back to Budapest, and then at 4 o'clock in the morning, Shelley called me to say it's happening. So I couldn't get back. But
you were there within hours.
I was there as soon as they could get me a flight.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But it did mean I got to the set, I got to the unit base, and I told them, you know, when this scene is done, can I go?
Yeah.
And they went, yeah, sure. And what they actually did was pulled me out of the scene.
Right.
And so I didn't have to film at all. And then they just went about trying to get me a flight. Amazing.
That's really good. Although, also, too right. A little bit.
Well... You'd hope, wouldn't you?
I think you do, because I think, especially with... I mean, I haven't had much experience in anything else, but I do kind of think that in most other arenas, like, and arenas whereby what you're doing is really important, still a birth of a child is... Do you know what I mean? Something like that is important. And I think sometimes, particularly with television, it's like other than perhaps the army, there's the feeling that, no, this is the thing that comes... first.
What you mean, the television concert?
Yeah, and I think that you wouldn't, I think even in a hospital or even in, like, you know, a political campaign or in things where there are quite high stakes, and arguably maybe higher stakes, maybe less money though, that there's a thing where you just have to go, okay, we are human beings, and this person just had a baby, and so you should probably go. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it all depends. I'm not saying it should, I'm not saying it is the case, but maybe it should be. I'm really glad they...
Yeah.
They did that, though.
I mean, I ended up... I was there via Skype.
So which was
very strange...
So she rang you at 4 o'clock in the morning, so you knew that you were never going to make it back.
Yes.
Sort of, unless she'd had a horrifically long labour, which you were going to hope she didn't.
Yes, I was hoping she...
So how did that feel? That must have felt... Because I think lots of fathers say they often feel quite, helpless... being in the same room, but that must have felt exacerbated by being like in another country.
Yeah, I mean, I was helpless, really. But I say thank God for Skype.
Yeah.
Because Shelley's mum was there.
Right.
She was there, always going to be there, because just in case this didn't work out, and it didn't work out.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So she was in... Turns out she was in the best hands.
Yeah.
She could have been.
I've definitely heard that before, that lots of people go, yeah, if I could choose between, I partner and my mother.
They would
at
choose
at that point. Yeah, yeah. It would mother. Probably be the mother. Yeah.
Yeah. And if yeah, I think that would be a wise yeah, yeah. choice.
Someone, yeah.
Yes, I mean, yeah.
And how?
I've played doctors.
Yeah.
I've been in doctors.
Have you?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So how did it feel then when you did finally come home and meet your daughter for the first time?
It was incredible. I mean, that the trip from the airport in the taxi to our house was the longest. Time seemed to really slow down then. I can really remember that feeling. But yes, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible feeling. Yeah.
And so going back to, you know, your what you were saying about, you know, obviously having being a parent, having a child is sort of wonderful in a way that you could you couldn't possibly have predicted, and yet it's sort of assault on your sense of self and, and your career and stuff. So how did that feel, you know, how did that manifest itself after, you know, once she was born and established and in your family?
Well, back to what you were saying a little bit, that there is seems to be a mentality that this, I don't know, it's probably in other industries, other jobs as well, but somehow this job has to come first.
Yeah.
And I think that goes with theatre, that goes with, you know, there is a something you want to do it because it's a vocation.
I think that is, to a lot of people, it's a calling, isn't it?
It's definitely part of my identity.
Yeah.
Even though I sometimes resist that, but I think it is part of my identity. And then suddenly having to shift that because my identity has becoming a father changed
is also
my
your
yes
identity
is
now.
A new identity,
yeah.
And actually the stakes are higher with a life in your hands.
Yeah.
So that is a big. It's a big shift. And actually, you say kindly that I've been doing, you know, lots of filming. I mean, it turns out most of the filming I've done since has been something I'd say is a kind of good, interesting part in a piece. But I've had a schedule, which meant I've got a lot of time off.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah,
something
yeah.
like Bodyguard.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the first, hang on. So I did Motherland, which is a
that's
full
what
on.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, yeah.
Yeah, that's a full on 6 weeks when
yeah.
it's
you're
an
in
episode.
Every day.
Yeah,
yeah,
most days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then something like Bodyguard was filmed over like a few months.
Right.
And I was in for a few days in a row, and then I'd have a couple of weeks off, then I'd come in again.
Yeah.
And the same with Mother, Father, Son, which is on has been on at the moment. And that's, you know, I really like to get my teeth into something, which means be a bit more consumed.
Yeah.
But that's changed, you know, since being.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I love those parts I can get my teeth into and that kind of remain relevant.
Yes, yeah.
And I suppose those are, if I'm lucky, those are the ones I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like to be part of the, I like to be working a lot in whatever it is. I like time off too to kind of refocus. But I mean, when I'm doing a job, I like to be in it.
Yes, right.
And sometimes those parts where you come in, have a couple of weeks off.
Yes, you can't. Yes, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that. And does that mean that theatre is quite attractive because obviously in its essence you are kind of like immersed in that character all the time?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've done
I did the first play recently since my kid was born.
Yeah.
In the winter, just.
Right, yeah.
And I think it was the only time, that was the first time I felt like it was possible for both of us to be working.
Yeah.
In that, doing theatre at the same time.
Yeah.
And we did it together.
Right, yeah. And why was that?
Just because Scout was a bit older.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows? Because any time away feels there's a guilt.
Yeah. But then you, because if you're, you know, talking about your calling, your sense of vocation, there's a tug in the other direction as well. I think, I mean, I don't have in any way that same thing, but I definitely have a need to make stuff.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not making stuff, I would feel as bad as if I was away from my kid all the time.
Yeah.
So it's that thing of getting the balance right. Definitely a balance. Which is really hard, yeah.
And a balance in a way that pre-kids, so you don't have to make.
You don't, but also you can end up... Well, that's why I think it can sometimes be quite focusing, because often what is said on this podcast is that people go... Because I think before I would have just... you know, done whatever came along, really, because you could, because there's no tug in any other direction. Whereas then when you're suddenly having to kind of, when you need that balance, you kind of, as you say, it's like, well, I want the part that's going to really feed me and kind of, and yeah. be nurtured, and I'm not going to just take the thing, oh yeah, okay, that's come up, that'll do, I can do that in the autumn or whatever. And
yes.
your priorities slightly change.
And I suppose that even that can change when, yeah. you know, at the moment, Shelley's working full time. When she's not working full time and we're both self-employed again, it will be a balance of sometimes.
So Shelley's taking... now, is it the artistic director of the Globe?
Yeah.
Yes. So that's a huge job as well.
As you know, those jobs are huge.
I do know.
I mean,
completely.
I could not do it. I don't know how.
Oh, I could totally do it.
Do you reckon you can nail it?
Totally nail it.
Oh, good.
Stand aside.
Okay.
No, just to be clear, I am joking. No, yes. Of course not. Because yeah. I don't know if it's the same with Michelle, but with David, it's every aspect of everything.
Yeah,
it's everything. Just everything, everything. Artistic director makes it sound quite nice and kind of like creative, and but it's not. It's, you know, and actually, I spoke to... Tamara Harvey a couple of weeks ago, who's the artistic director of Theatre Clwyd, and it's the same thing. Like you're managing a building as well yeah. as you
it's
know.
It's another relationship.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yes, totally, yeah. totally.
Yeah.
So huge.
So that is huge, yeah.
Yeah.
And a massive for her to find the balance between being artistic director, being mum, and being in a relationship.
Yeah.
I.e. to me.
You know what? Yeah.
You know, being a
but
being
that's
a wife.
So true as well, isn't yeah. it? And that actually doesn't... We don't talk about that very much.
You should talk to her.
I really want to. I really want to.
If you could find the time.
I'll go and meet her.
Actually, I should do a podcast with her. Maybe I'll get to see her. It was part yeah. of the reason why we did a play, actually, because...
Oh, yeah, you knew you'd be working together and seeing
we knew we'd be working together, yeah. And we could, even though... I mean, the play was... Macbeth.
Yeah.
You can say that in a recording studio. You don't have to say Scottish.
You don't have to. Because we're not in a theatre, yeah. so it's fine.
So even though we were plotting to murder people every yeah. night, we still got time, yeah. you know, to
and
see
do you from. And does your daughter get to run around? I think your daughter's sort of in between my kid's age, maybe.
She's two and a half.
There she is, yeah. So my daughter's two and my son's three.
Right.
So does she run around... I took my kids to something on the South Bank the other day, and I realised that because they run around the chocolate factory quite a lot, they have no sense of, like, sort of, they don't think they have to be quiet or have any kind of deference or any kind of, like, no. They just went to see a show and they were just, like, heckling. And,
yes.
and I loved it. Obviously, I was so proud. But there was a part of me, I thought, God, I'm almost... embarrassed, like a teenager would be embarrassed of their parents. Like, I'm proud on an intellectual level, but on a slightly, like, the other people are kind of going, my God, who are these kids? Going, yeah, and kind of like lying to the people on stage just so the people on stage would come and like get them up on
engage
stage and stuff
them,
like that.
Yeah.
It was quite grotesque, but brilliant, but grotesque.
Yeah, well, I think we're definitely bringing her up to be completely wild. No,
yeah.
that's not.
But comfortable in that. I love the idea that she's running around and.
No, she. No, I mean that we're not bringing up to be wild. We're bringing it and we're feeding her. She
yeah, you
have
are.
To,
she's
like,
not. She doesn't have
scavenge.
To hunt for her own
no,
food.
No.
on the South Bank.
No.
Which would be quite difficult.
Or find her own shelter. No, she's. but I think at the moment, at the moment she's very comfortable around people, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the people in working in the theatre department at the Globe, know her very well. Yeah. She comes in and goes, "Hello, team."
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, she's really comfortable
nice.
Around people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's nice to have that. My mum was a radio producer, and she had her own company, and we used to go in. I think it's really nice to see your parents at work and doing something they love and being part of almost another family.
Yeah.
And that was such a positive example to me. I remember it really clearly, and I used to love it going in.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting being around other people, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
For a little.
Thing. And to see your parents in a completely different but close and kind of amazing unit that you don't get to see. It's like peering behind the curtain, especially if you aren't seeing your parents all the time, you know. It's really, I think it's quite lush, actually.
Yeah. Hello?
Is it a microphone?
I interviewed a comedian, writer, Fergus Craig, about him having his son and his feelings around it. And a lot of the things he was saying were similar to a lot of things that women say when they first have children, which is kind of what you're touching on, which is a kind of like, you know, you really question your identity and who you are and what you want out of life and all that kind of thing.
Yes.
And I remember interviewing him and going straight to a party where you were, and there was Sam Spruill was there, and I said to him, I was talking to him, and I said, "Well, it really surprised me that actually he had, you know, exactly the same, he had exactly the same feelings as lots of my female friends." And Sam just looked at me and went, "I don't know any bloke who doesn't feel like that."
Yeah.
And I wonder if you know, obviously your career was going well and stuff, but how did that kind of feel and come into play?
Well, I think it's funny you mentioned Sam, actually, because he's been a big example for me, because the way often to me, he hits such a reality when he speaks about things.
Oh, yeah,
he's
I should get him.
Beautifully
on. Yeah, honest. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Too honest. No, he's not.
Horribly
no,
honest.
Horrible.
No, but he's very, he often hits the nail on the head, and you're kind of like, oh, yeah, that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Because he was the kind of first person. When he'd had his kid, he spoke so honestly about how sometimes he'd be completely fucked off.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, that was releasing because...
Because it goes against the narrative that you're fed often. Yeah.
Like I said at the beginning of this, I was saying it was the most incredible thing to have a kid. More incredible than I could have imagined, but also more annoying than I could ever have imagined. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know...
So how did that annoyingness manifest? How did it?
Well, I mean, it's just a constant having been, in retrospect, if I'd known now, you must have heard this before, but like if I knew then what I know now about how much time I had and how much freedom I had.
When she was a baby? Oh, what,
no,
Because even I look back on when my eldest was a baby. And I think, I mean, we would go for a pub lunch and just take, he would be in the car seat and he'd be asleep for the whole fucking lunch.
Yeah.
And we thought it was hard, but we still went out and did what we wanted to do, generally with a sleeping baby in a fucking car seat on the pub table. And everything kind of stayed the same. I mean, it didn't, obviously. But like, I look back now, I think you were there. I'm sure we met at a pub in Brockwell Park, and my two were kind of in peak, like, feral crazy mode. It's like, why did I even bother to think I could come here and have a conversation with someone?
Yes.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But going back to your pre-child life, which, and you, for me, represent, we were almost part of the last, in my head, the last people to have not had children. We used to go out fairly regularly.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there was suddenly a wave with you and me and Ollie and Brian and Kate, and we all had children
within
that. And Daisy was a bit before, though. She was the first.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it was like we all just... But it happened really quickly,
were,
didn't
those
it?
Those were good days, weren't they?
The Coach and Horses days.
Yeah.
They were so good.
Yeah.
They were good because a lot of people... It's nice to be without children when you're old enough still to enjoy. You know, I remember being on holiday with Ingrid in, like, we just went to Mallorca for a long weekend. Like, we had enough disposable income to do something that, you know, which I didn't in my 20s, that we could just go, should we get a bit of sun in May? Let's go for 5 days and just chat and sit by a pool. And it's not like it doesn't have to be our only holiday of the year. It's like a thing we can just do and not think that much about.
Yeah.
And I remember us lying by the pool and going, oh, you know, lots of our friends have kids, but this is pretty sweet too. Like, we do probably want kids at some point, but this is pretty sweet too. And I'm going to enjoy this, you know, for what it is. So we had it quite good.
Yeah. Well,
but then
exactly. So then you, yeah. God, it was good. Let's not. Let's not dwell on that.
Face. Yeah.
God. yes, I suppose. Again, it's down to identity, isn't it? Like the challenge to your own identity, maybe your own narcissism, which comes from there is this being that just needs and needs and needs.
Yeah.
And you have to give and give and give. Otherwise, you're a terrible parent.
Yeah. The way it was explained to me before having children is, because when you say that to someone without children, you think, that sounds horrific. Like, what a horrible assault, you know, like on my freedom. But the key thing is you desperately want to give and give and give. And like, you love that child so much.
Yeah.
That if, you know, it's not about the waking up in the night. It's about the waking up in the night and, oh, shit, what's wrong with them? You know, I care about, you know, if my daughter's really crying in the middle of the night, obviously, I don't like being woken up, but I'm also thinking, shit, what's wrong with her? Why is she crying? Oh, my God, I hope she's okay. And that's the thing that people don't really explain. It's like, it's not just a kind of, it's not like a burglar alarm going off next door. That would be annoying. But, like, a lot of the goodness of it is the worry as well, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, our kid. She has not been a good sleeper. I'm really glad that you were able to go to the pub and eat.
Yeah.
But this one decided that
not
wasn't so going to be
that
the case.
Wasn't for you.
And she's not, you know, and to this day, I mean, she was up at 3 this morning. And then came into our bed and was wriggling around until,
yes,
you know.
Now, here's a fact I was told. I don't know if it's true. The person who told me it, I know, listens to this podcast, Alice. So if it's not true, write in and I will forward it to Alice. But apparently, we all have a hormone. As adults, we have a hormone that paralyzes us when we're asleep.
Now, I've heard about this.
Yes, and so when you're a young child and a toddler, you haven't developed this hormone yet, which is why they wriggle so much in their sleep. That's why they are very difficult bed partners.
Right.
You know, my son slept in our bed last night and woke up horizontal. You know, like feet in my chest, you know.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
That's quite interesting.
Now, maybe Alice...
makes you more forgiving of it.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Maybe Alice can, because what I'd heard was, at some point during the night, there's like a switch that goes and your whole body kind of loses the ability to move.
Yeah.
As a regenerative
right.
thing.
Yes.
And then if you wake up during that time, it's sleep paralysis. You know, so you can't actually, now I've been living as if this is the truth. Because some sleep doctor told me this.
Oh, yeah. What, when you wake up, you go, I'm sorry, I can't get out of bed. David has that.
Yes. I don't think David's got sleep paralysis. That's not...
That's something else.
No, but you've heard of sleep paralysis.
Yes,
that thing when you wake up and you can't, you're locked in. So what about that?
But surely more people would wake up in that point.
I don't know. I mean, I'm...
I think that sounds like bullshit.
Do you think it sounds like... Well,
because
I think this
people wake up
from...
at all different kinds times of the night, and surely more people would do that, and that would be more of a thing. But I haven't heard...
Never heard that before. I've been carrying this around. It was a doctor from...
A doctor?
A Harley Street
Makes clinic. Me believe it more.
I know, but unless they'd...
We're going to... Yes, write in.
Does that really happen? Because I like the idea.
Yeah.
And I've had sleep paralysis once... Where I'd woken up and I couldn't move, and it felt like something was...
Oh, so it does happen.
...pressing on my chest and keeping me...
Oh, my God.
...still, but I think... And it wasn't my kid. It was pre-kid.
Mm.
So maybe it does happen, I don't know.
Yes. Maybe there have to be a few other factors for it to happen.
Hmm.
Let's just say that, shall we?
Maybe, yeah.
So, yes, so you're not sleeping, so still kind of wakes up in the night and comes into your bed and things like that.
Yeah, which is beautiful as well.
Yes,
like,
I know.
The thing about, you know, everything is forgiven in the morning.
Yeah.
But during the night, nothing is forgiven. Nothing is forgiven.
It's so hard. We've had this conversation before about sort of co-sleeping and things like that, because I definitely, one of my core memories is, you know, my parents split up when I was quite young, so it was just my mum. But I just remember, and being quite old, probably doing this up to the age of about 8 or 9, maybe. Sorry. not every night, but I would wake up in the night and there would just be a default thing of just going up to my mum's room because I knew I'd be able to go back to sleep. And just that fear, and what that is essentially is just that feeling of such security, like such deep security, that just by lying in her bed I'd be asleep like that, but I'd be awake in my own room. And that's what I kind of, for me, is one of the kind of still most incredible things about having young children, is that I have this magic ability through no ability of my own, like through nothing I've done, just by default, that my son wakes up in the night and he can't go back to sleep, and he comes in our room and he lies next to me and he's out like a light, because it's that feeling of just like ultimate safeness.
Yeah, but it is through you as well, because you have to be able to provide that safeness.
Yes, but I sort of think that, like, yeah, I mean, unless I was going to be kind of a really horrible, abusive person, then he would probably have that feeling anyway, at 3. You know what I mean? Maybe not at 9. But
because,
like,
it's the...
Because it's just like, because I'm his mum kind of thing. And that just feels like I have superpowers. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, that's... But it's amazing to be able to provide that.
Yeah, just to be that is kind of amazing. But that said, like, one of the most recurring conversations we have on this is the killer that is no sleep. And it affects your work, your mind, your sense of self, your relationship with your partner, like, everything. And it's like, I mean, we eventually did sleep training with our kids because they were too close together and it was too hellish. And they still have issues, but, like, they sleep through the night now, generally. Or they might come into our room, but, they, you know, I mean, like, we're not perfect, but, like, we definitely... Yeah, there was a point, you know, when they would wake up every... I just couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
We generally get a full night's sleep.
That's wonderful.
Even if we get kicked in the side.
Yeah, okay. That's wonderful for you.
Yeah, okay.
I think there's another thing in there about, actually, as mom, you can provide that exactly what that kid needs in a way that, as dad, you can't for the first period.
Now, is that... So I didn't breastfeed, so that's not the case in terms of that.
Does... I don't know what difference that makes. I just wonder... I don't know if it's an energy thing.
I don't know.
Or like the feel of a body. I don't know.
It's interesting to know because... particularly with you and Michelle, because I imagine you're pretty equal in terms of looking after your daughter. You know, you're not. It's not like
I think
you know. You share it.
Yeah, we do, and I think our life has so far with our kid has worked in kind of it works in stages, doesn't it? Because for the first period when she was born, I was working. pretty full on for about 8 months.
Yeah.
And Shelley was able to come and live in Budapest for... She came for about six or seven weeks in the end, which was a long time to be in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Like you, her identity, again,
is
just... She was just a feeding machine.
Yeah. And none of her friends around.
None of her friends around.
I did that... When David did a play in California,
right?
I mean, same language, so slightly different. But I felt, I still look back on it and feel like I felt disproportionately down about it.
Yeah,
and it sounds and probably so
probably resentful as well.
A bit resentful, completely lost, like quite depressed. And it's ridiculous because it's not ridiculous because it was what it was. But like, you know, when you said, "Oh yeah, we're going to San Francisco to do it," you know, it's great, but it was very strange because you're just at that point coming to terms with being a parent yourself, but you're doing it in an alien place.
Very strange. And I do kind of, the older I get, I think I really appreciate community. And since having Scout, and in a city that is doesn't necessarily nurture community, does it? It's so busy and it's so...
And it's so sprawling.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to see people, even friends, if you're not... And your world gets so much smaller, doesn't it, when you have children?
Yes. So anyway, so here she was in Budapest, and then she was, probably for the first 10 months before she started the Globe, it was really full on for her.
Yeah.
And then since then, it's been different. I know she struggles with her time away.
Yeah.
And then I think I sometimes struggle with my my availability.
Yeah.
You know, so it's
yeah
because it's great to be adaptable. And but sometimes I've now preparing for an audition is very different to what it was. Sometimes I've barely had time to read it. But this, I think this will change now that,
that's,
you know, she's our kid's older. Getting older.
But just
for that, I think it's only just changing now.
But also I wonder how much of it is changing because they're getting older, but also you're getting better at meeting the challenges of being a parent. You're getting more used to the, you know, you described it before as, it's a new part of me. Being a parent is a new part of me. So you're getting better acquainted with that new part of you. So that whereas before, you know, I'd be out and suddenly go, shit, I haven't brought nappies. I mean, that's a sort of a lame example, but it's like, that's not going to happen to me now.
It still happens.
Well, occasionally it does. You're right. And actually, it does still happen to me occasionally, but like
wet
I know
wipes,
what to
mainly
do.
Wet wipes.
Yeah, they're probably more important, aren't they?
Like you can't.
You can't leave
the house without wet wipes.
No.
And I do. Most,
and I panic if I... Yeah. And then the time you need them, of course, is the only time you haven't brought them.
Yeah.
That was interesting. But why do we talk about something else now?
So you started recording Motherland.
Yeah.
I hesitate because I always call it Motherhood.
Yeah.
Just like what an old lady would... No, it's Motherland. Motherhood?
No, Sophie, it's Motherland.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, no, Sophie, it is motherhood.
No.
Sophie, fucking idiot. It's so embarrassing.
I think a lot of people called it motherhood, though, actually.
It's one of those things where you see, you know, when you read something and your brain fills the rest of the word.
It's,
you know,
mother,
I mean,
something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You think, oh, I know, it'll be motherhood. No, yeah, mate, read the whole thing.
And it could be motherfucker.
That's true. Yeah. So you filmed that after having... Were you a father by the time you filmed it?
Yes.
Yes.
So, oh, hang on a second. So we filmed the pilot.
Yes, of course.
And I was... And kids were not on the horizon.
Not even on the horizon?
I don't know. We were probably... Like, wow. As far as I can remember, we'd vaguely...
So you certainly weren't pregnant or anything like that.
And then by the time we came to film... Yeah, we had our kid had been born. That's when we filmed the first season.
Amazing. Yeah. And did that affect how you played your character? Because your character, from my understanding, is the only one who seems to love his kids.
He loves being...
Yeah, he loves being a parent.
Yeah. Which is really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Because we... So I and the writers...
One of whom is one of my best friends in the whole world.
Holly Walsh. Holly, yeah. Okay,
I very much like Sharon Horgan too, but
yes,
but
okay.
Holly is, yeah.
Me and Holly were talking, me and Sharon were talking particularly about this Kevin.
Yeah.
Because he's a really he's a clown.
Yeah.
Somebody who really wants something and is just coming up short all the time.
Yeah.
So he's like, there's a tragic clown about him. But also, I think he's quite easy to dismiss.
Yeah.
And he's not the type of man you would particularly want in your life necessarily.
No.
And yet, I mean, I've struggled with the idea that, you know, we need society to change.
Yeah.
Except somehow this type of man is a little bit unacceptable.
Well, oh, I see what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not the kind of... lacking in masculinity or something. Lacking in... well, he doesn't lack agency. To be a parent, you need a great deal of agency. Yeah.
He's the one who's on top of it all. He has the numbers of all the other mothers. Yes. So if they're in a situation, well, where is that? And you go, well, it's...
He knows where it is.
Or what? Yeah.
He organises things. He uses his imagination to kind of...
Make
probably terrible kids' costumes. And kind of provides the party for the kids, really. But still, he's quite easy to dismiss, and yet we need this.
Yeah.
Stay-at-home dad.
Definitely, of course.
You know,
I mean, what's really hard about a motherland? There's me slowing down again.
Were you going to say motherhood?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Sorry. So what's really interesting about it, and I quote it all the time because I just think it's. I can't think of anything else that's so nail on the head in terms of. So many, you know, tiny aspects of parenting and all that kind of thing. It's so brilliant. But I think it wouldn't be a comedy if you were to have... Because I think the one thing I would level at it is that it doesn't show the love. And I haven't seen... Obviously, you're filming the latest season.
Yeah, it's finished now. Yeah, we finished filming the second season.
But I didn't see... You don't see a lot of the love. You see the love through your character in a way, whereas you don't see it necessarily through any of the women. Maybe you do near the end, but then there's no comedy in that.
No,
it wouldn't be funny. So you do kind of have to have. So if you do have your character who is the one who actually is kind of going, this is great, and I'm going to put everything into this. You kind of need. He needs to be funny in another way.
Yeah,
and it's funny having him as a bit of a. Yeah, it's exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the incredible challenge of like insightful comic writing, where it has to be true and it also has to be funny. So you can't just go, you know, let's, you know, anyway.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what they did this time is they let him win a bit.
Oh, good. Okay.
Instead, I think. He can't always fail. Otherwise, he's just hapless.
Yeah. And also, I mean, going back to what you're saying about we do need men like that. We do need stay-at-home men. So they can't be totally...
Yes.
Ridiculed.
Which is a real balance.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there was there was an interview on Woman's Hour that Anna and Sharon did.
Right.
And in that interview, his character, that character, was dismissed kind of out of hand. Obviously not by them.
Yeah, because they're
Sharon had to say, actually, no, he's a really good dad. He's one of the people that's really good dad. Yeah. But the person taking the interview was, there is a couple of guys in there. There's that one guy, but he's totally useless. Mm. And I was like, gosh, that is so interesting.
Yeah.
It's so interesting considering what
this program is all about.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was kind of taken back by that.
Yeah.
A little bit. But it's also, what is that? What is acceptable? There are standards. There is something we still judge each other by that we need to fulfill.
Well, there's the whole thing about unconscious bias, and that there's this stuff in our head telling us all the time about how people should be and how things should
constant.
Be. And we may know intellectually that it should be one way, but, you know, you see a man, in inverted commas, being weak, in inverted commas.
Yes.
And then you're like, hang on, that doesn't match something. So you might be presenting Woman's Hour, but you're still going to go, he's a bit of a loser, isn't he?
Yes.
You know, and you're not even realising what's going on as you're having, you're saying that sentence kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It's a minefield.
Yes, it really is. Everyone I have on here, I ask the same two questions.
Is this Desert Island Discs?
It's Desert Island Discs. Oh, I'm going to ask you, what are your favourite children's songs? No, not.
Oh, thank God.
No, what I was going to ask you was, what's the worst thing anyone's said to you, parenting-wise? Either advice or passing comment or...
I've been a mixture between partly open to going, what shall I do here? Because this is, you know, every situation is a new situation.
Yeah.
And I'm talking with my kids. So I'm going, okay, well, you know, when I'm evaluating what's wrong with her, if there's anything wrong, and, you know, you have to make decisions, and you have to make sometimes quick decisions.
Yeah.
And you have to feel you have to feel strong in those decisions.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It's that's something that is on another level.
Yeah.
So I wonder why I can't remember particularly somebody saying something awful, because maybe I kind of open myself to ask advice, you know.
Yeah.
But also on the flip side, I don't take fully on what people say.
Yeah, right. You're confident enough. I think that also comes with age, going on about your age. But funnily enough, the person I used to ask was Holly, because her son's 2 months older than Zach.
Right.
So I would, like, WhatsApp her in the middle of the night, and she'd be breastfeeding. She could answer me at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd go, I remember saying to her, my, whatever, two-day, three-day-old son can only sleep on my tummy, and the midwife's told me I can't let him because he'll, you know, I could roll over and I could hurt him.
Yeah.
But I can't stay awake. And it was, like, literally 3 a.m. I was like, what do I do? And she just replied immediately and said, I did that. And you'll be fine, and you won't roll over, and you need to sleep. And I literally just went.
Yeah.
It was like she gave me permission. But yeah, you need someone who's just a little bit further ahead, I think, sometimes.
Yes.
But yeah, as you say, also to have the confidence to go, oh yeah, no, maybe that person isn't always right. Although Holly is.
Is she always right? Gosh, if she ever listens to this, I have not got that from our conversation. but actually, obviously, and this must be for everybody who has a kid, everybody has an opinion about how what you should do, and it's just that is overwhelming. I remember like when our kid was born, she was tongue-tied and we didn't know for a little while, but she wasn't putting on enough weight, and she'd found some kind of ingenious way to feed, but it wasn't getting her enough.
Wasn't enough.
And then she had snipped, and she was starting to feed more, and she was putting on, we were told, you know, you have to give her bottles as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to keep feeding her.
Yeah.
Even though our kid was putting on weight and her weight was going up, there was such negativity in how the person was speaking that I remember having to stop the conversation and said, actually, can we just say this is really positive?
Yeah.
And actually things are going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Because I think there must be something quite easy to slip into a negative negativity when you're talking about a life. There's a lot of worry around.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of worry around.
Yeah. And you've got to focus on them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of those people, because they're doing it with so many babies and so many families, they forget that the weight of what they're saying.
Yeah.
And that if they're, you know, sounding slightly negative, then you do have to pull back and kind of go, this is, we're still doing what we want to be doing and it's working. So,
And there are no rules, which is something that comforts
and
me a lot. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would be if there was someone sitting here who's about to have an actor who was sitting here about to have a child, what would your words of advice be?
Are they with their partner? They're married.
They're in exactly the situation you were in.
Okay. Somebody said a really brilliant thing.
Yeah.
It was an actress who said it to Shelley, which was, don't take too seriously what you say to your partner for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Because it will be brutal.
Yeah.
Because you'll both be going through something
enormous.
And it will be to do with identity and it will be to do with tiredness. But I think that saved me quite a lot, actually. Because it's true, you say brutal things because you're just stretched. And it probably is the tiredness, but you're stretched.
Yeah.
Such good advice from Paul Reddy there. My guest next time is the actor Harry Peacock. He is the partner of Catherine Parkinson, who we had on a couple of weeks ago. And he is well known for playing the hilarious Ray Purchase in Toast. He was also in The Kennedys, and he's been in lots of things. But this is the first couple we have had on, so I cross-examined him at length, just married up what Catherine said and what he had said, and obviously, just to sort of squeeze out any inconsistencies. But their story sticks. Till then, hope you have a good few weeks, and see you next time.
Bye-bye.